Welcome to the show. We are not open line, open topic, okay? As some of you may have remembered, Dalt McGuinty in 2010 put forth what some people believe to be a very, very radical sex education curriculum for public schools in Ontario. Parents groups and religious groups were enraged. And I'd like to remind people that the real, driving force in this was Kathleen Wynne, because she was the education minister at the time. And Kathleen Wynne, being very, very familiar with this sex ed curriculum, pretty much has vowed that she's going to, make it mandatory for public schools in Ontario. And the Institute for Marriage and Family has come up with a report. And if you go to my Twitter account or the Late Night Council Facebook page, I tweeted a link where you can read the entire report at your leisure. And the author of that report is Peter John Mitchell, who's guesting on Late Night Council tonight. Welcome to the show, Peter. Good to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, John.
Now, what is in Kathleen Wynne's sex ed agenda that, she doesn't want parents to see it? Apparently, there's only going to be one parent from each school council. She doesn't want to make this sex ed curriculum public. And, enough of it got out 4 years ago that parents groups and religious groups across the province were absolutely enraged. If it's so good, why does she have to be so secretive about it?
Well, I think it does go back to rewinding back to 2010 when the curriculum was first released, and I think part of the fuel on the fire was that when it was released, it was put on the ministry website, which is fairly normal, but I think perhaps it was not adequately communicated, and so I think some parents were caught off guard by it, and then I think sex ed has been in Ontario schools for decades, but it's always been controversial. And I think that perhaps the Ministry of Education didn't quite anticipate the kind of concern that some parents were going to raise. In particular, one of the issues that some parents were concerned with was the age at which certain concepts were introduced, and perhaps how those concepts would be introduced. And curriculum documents aren't necessarily very detailed on exactly what how things will be presented, but it does give some examples. So some of the things that I think maybe caused parents to pause were the introduction of ideas of like oral sex and anal sex in grade 7. There was some talk about self-stimulation in grade 6, and then the introduction of some gender theory ideas in grade 3. So those are some of the things that...
Did you just say gender theory ideas?
Yeah, for grade 3. So that caught some parents.
For grade 3s. Now, could you explain to us what gender theory ideas are? I mean, that sounds like a pretty advanced concept for high school kids, never mind like grade 3 kids. What is that?
I think it would be discussions around what is gender. I believe there might have been some discussion around gender roles and gender formation. Now, obviously, it was aimed to try to be at a grade 3 level. I'm sort of using the adult language or whatever around that, but certainly I think it left parents, at least some parents, scratching their heads and not really too sure, well, what exactly does that mean? So fast forward, as you said in your introduction, the ministry pulled back that curriculum for a rethink, and it said that it would strive to offer some sort of a mechanism in which to engage parents. So here we are now, 2014. Earlier this year, the ministry announced that, yes, it will present some sort of curriculum again for the September 2015. Now, as you have said, it does not release exactly what that curriculum is.
So you haven't seen that curriculum. It seems like it's very, very secretive.
It's interesting that there has been a bit of a process. I mean, the one thing you can say for the ministry is at least it has made announcement that this is coming. It did provide a very short brief for parents, and it has said something about surveying one parent from every school about appropriateness of introduction of themes and sources of information, but we don't know We don't know exactly what that means. And
surveying one parent from every school. Now, who determines who that one parent is going to be?
As far as I've been able to find out in my inquiries, it will likely be somebody from the parent council, maybe even the head of the parent council. The interesting thing is that that rollout of that survey is supposed to happen almost immediately, but we still haven't seen the curriculum. So it's, in a sense, giving an opinion survey on surrounding issues about a curriculum that we haven't actually seen. It hasn't actually been released.
So now, do we have any reason to believe that the more perceived radical elements of it have been altered or changed whatsoever?
I don't think anything has really been, there really has been no indications because the curriculum really hasn't been released. So I'm not sure. The government certainly, or certainly the Ministry of Education rather, has indicated in some of its briefings that there is a need to update the curriculum. I would agree with that. Yes, it's very old. They have indicated that they believe that there's a need to introduce topics at an earlier age. One of the examples that was given in some of the press release was that, for instance, we're seeing girls enter puberty a little bit earlier than we have in the past, and so we need to have this information kind of earlier. That was sort of the excuse. So I anticipate that, yes, there'll probably remain some of these elements that were perhaps upsetting for some parents may very well be in the curriculum, but of course we don't know.
Now, have you? I mean, has there been any indication that parents' desires and wishes have been, you know, considered in the formulating of this curriculum, or has it all been so-called academic experts?
Well, the ministry does lay out a process that it goes through for all its curriculum reviews, and this happens for every subject area. Happens every about 7 years. The process is about a 3-year review. So there's a very general outline, but specifically who has been considered, what kind of engagement. There is opportunity to engage parents, although there's no laid out formal process, at least that the ministry provides for which they follow. But certainly parents
because
engage. So we don't know. We don't know.
Yeah, because we get the feeling that parents have not been consulted at all, that the ministry is going to do whatever they want because they believe, you know, well, we know how to raise your kids and we know what's priorities for a kid better than you do. That seems to be the perception out there. Now, you are the author of a responsive report to this. What was the purpose of you putting together that report with the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada?
Yeah, so we pulled together a report called Making Sex Education Work, and really, it was to look at the role of parents in sex education, and there is quite a bit of evidence, quite a bit of data that supports, even outside of curriculum, just the role that parents have and the influence that parents have. We know that close parent relationships with their children has been correlated with delayed sexual initiation, with lower risk of pregnancy, a host of other outcomes. There's been an ongoing survey in the U.S. of teens and their parents, where teens consistently report that the parents are most influential in their sexual decision-making, and yet parents chronically underestimate their own influence. So one of our hopes with the report is that parents will engage in this kind of information, that they'll be able to see the data that backs up the kind of influence they have, and particularly on the kind of relationship they need to have. The second part of that would be looking at how parents can be engaged, both in the process of curriculum development, but also once that curriculum rolls out, how can parents be engaged with the school? How can there be that partnership there?
Now, what was the purpose of the report, though? I mean, did you feel that the information that is in the report is not being made public? It seems to be overlooked. It seems to be that the data, and I've seen the report, it's filled with, you know, good cold hard data from studies and some pretty substantial stuff in there. Was nobody else doing this, or like have you given the report to the ministry? Has there been a response to it? When was it released?
Well, we just released the report this week on Wednesday.
Okay,
fact, so
okay,
it's still making its way out there. Yeah, I think really the report came out of watching the developments out of 2010 and just watching this process and observing it and asking questions. And one of those questions, and I think part of the report is just addressing some of the presumptions and some of the assumptions that people bring to this debate. As I said before, I do think the curriculum needs to be updated. It is quite old, but when I hear it talked about, it often the conversation makes it sound like children are not receiving any type of instruction in their school. One of the groups that are promoting moving ahead with the curriculum has even suggested that children's health is at risk because we're using this older curriculum. I don't really see evidence of that. And I think there's been an overconfidence put on, or certainly high expectations put on, a curriculum-based sex education program that I don't think the evidence overall warrants. I think sex education is a tool. I think it's important that kids have the right information, but I often think of it as the dull arrow in the quiver. I think of it as an important tool, but it is not our most effective tool. There's plenty of research that would suggest that while we can increase knowledge about sexual health, that doesn't always correlate to sexual health behavior. And there's probably a number of reasons for that. Part of that's the nature of teen sexual decision-making. Part of that's the nature of teen development. So I think it's a tool, but I think there's just been so much emphasis on what they hope is accomplished through the curriculum. And I think the parent side of that is missing. I think really the importance of parents hasn't been talked about, and that's really one of the reasons why we wanted to raise it.
When I hear Kathleen Wynn talk about the new sex ed curriculum, and, you know, she even used the examples, you know, with the Jan Gomeshi affair and, you know, the allegations of sexual assault, it's more important now than ever before that we get this sex ed curriculum. She actually said that this week, that we get this sex ed curriculum in the schools. It needs to get in there now, as if it's going to be the silver bullet that's going to change those kind of things.
Yeah, I think I've heard that from numerous sources, and we've sort of heard that kind of talk. And certainly, you don't have to look very far to see what happens when sex goes sideways, whether it's sexual harassment, abuse. We've seen some pretty devastating stories in terms of bullying and bullying that has a sexual element to it. So I can understand the concern. I think we need to be looking at our data and where is our data leading us, and not letting panic on either side of this issue, whether people are supportive of the changes or not supportive of the changes, not letting that anxiety drive the issue, but really let's look at the data and move forward on that.
Go to the Late Night Council Facebook page. The link is there. You can read the report, or you can check out my tweets on Twitter. It was tweeted out there yesterday at JW Council. More with Peter John Mitchell when we get back. You can call in now, okay? If I'm not asking him the questions that needs to be asked, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility. 1-800-582-3372 is the long distance line. We're right back after this. Stay with us.
This is the community's release valve. You're tuned into Late Night Council on 580 CFRA.
Okay, I've made that report a little easier to find now on Twitter at JW Council and on the Late Night Council Facebook page. It is at the top of the list there, and you can read it at your leisure. Now, Peter, what was your reaction to, it was in the papers yesterday, and I forget what the percentage was, but it's pretty high, that, and maybe you can remember the percentages, that I think the headline read that most kids in North America are learning about sex from the internet.
Yeah, it certainly is a different world than it was maybe 20 years ago, even, obviously. And I think that's something that parents obviously need to be on top of. It really is a challenge, especially with kids with devices in their hands. And so there definitely is a need to be on this. It's always a challenge for parents to try to understand when is the best time to introduce certain topics and certain decisions. So they say now that the average exposure to porn on the internet is probably around age 11, if that's helpful to parents. So you need to be thinking about how to address that with kids. And certainly if they have a handheld device that's internet capable, chances of being exposed to porn, even unknowingly or certainly unintentionally, is certainly a possibility. What may also be helpful for parents, the American Association for Child and Adolescent Psychiatry suggests that parents respond to kids' curiosity levels with not too little information, but not too much information. Now, that's a little bit tricky, but I think parents are best situated to try to make that judgment call. And I think parents with more than one kid know that your kids have different sensitivities, even within your own family. And so trying to gauge how to message that and how to how to engage kids in that. It can be tricky, but I think parents are best positioned for that. Now, we have certainly seen some research around use of devices and that type of thing, and research tends to show that homes that have stated guidelines about use of technology tend to have a little better outcomes in terms of being able to help kids navigate the web. The web is a great place. Obviously, there's a lot of positive there. We don't want to turn kids off using it. They live online. This is they say it is the first generation that are digital natives. They've grown up with this. But it's important for households, I think, to have guidelines and for parents to follow those guidelines as well. Sometimes those cell phones need at a certain time of night, they need to have a curfew. They need to come and have a place where they sleep as well, whether it's in the kitchen with mom and dad's cell phone as well. If you're going to give your child a cell phone, I mean, you probably need to think about what age is appropriate as well. So certainly there is information out there. Certainly there is studies that would show that if you have some guidelines and you have some idea of how the technology works is another important aspect, knowing how technology works and being familiar with it, that gives you a leg up in trying to help kids.
Now, there seems to be, and I mean, maybe it's just my perception, that the Ministry of Education in Ontario kind of has the attitude, well, parents are not stepping up to the plate here. They're not doing their job like they should be doing it, so we're going to step in and we're going to do the job now. Is that perception real?
Certainly in the document, and when the 2010 document went up and then it was rescinded, there was certainly a paragraph in that document that talked about the role that parents have, particularly in communicating and teaching ethnocultural values, spiritual values, personal beliefs, and working with educators to create a framework where kids can grow and develop. So there's certainly, at least within that document, there was some sort of acknowledgement that parents have certainly have a role. I think there is sort of this stereotype. I don't know if it's, I wouldn't say it necessarily with the ministry, I don't know, but just in general that parents are deeply uncomfortable or not equipped or really incapable of having these discussions. And talking about sex is not the one time the talk. It really is a conversation. When you actually look at polling data of parents, and this has been done in the early 2000s in New Brunswick and again in Ontario.
And a lot of this data is in your report, isn't it?
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm referring to data that's in the report.
Yeah.
Really actually shows that parents are quite comfortable engaging their kids on this, and they know that it's important. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not necessarily looking for good resources to help them out and help figure that out, but parents are, I think, confident that they can address these issues. And to be honest, in 2014, parents no longer have the choice, I think, to leave this up to the school. I think it's just too much, too important of an issue, and it is just a sex-saturated culture. They have to be engaged in this conversation. And I would also stress, too, and this is really important, and I don't see this many other places, and that's why we put it in the report, home environment is critical as well. It's not just the conversations, it's the relationship that you develop with your kids. There's a Canadian developmental psychologist by the name of Gordon Neufeld, and he says that teen sex is rarely just about sex. It's not just burgeoning hormones, although I'm sure that that's certainly part of it, but there is more to it. There is more to why kids get involved sexually. There's a hunger to be desired. Sometimes it's just a symbol of control or status. In fact, there was a study recently that showed that, you know, sometimes we think kids engage in risk behavior because they want to get a leg up socially, but this recent study suggested that, no, actually, some kids engage in risky behavior just to maintain the social status that they have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Most often, it's really just an expression of wanting to be wanted and attached. And currently, I think what we're seeing, particularly in youth culture, is peer-to-peer relational primary relationships, and we've lost something of this attachment or relationship between kids and adults, where it used to be that adults welcomed children up into adulthood. I think we're missing that level, and we're seeing a culture that's really insular, it's really peer-to-peer, and it's missing that adult level, to the point where a couple of years ago, when in BC they introduced their provincial bullying curriculum, they suggested they had this expert come on and talk about, you know, in the schools and her conversations with the kids, and she said, you know, kids seem more attached to the physical space in the school than they do to anybody in there. There's really more attachment to a physical space than a relationship. I think that should shake up the educational system. That should really get us thinking when we hear things like that.
Peter, thank you for coming on. We got to go to the news.
Right,
he's the author of a terrific report. You gotta read it for yourself, and you can at JW Council on Twitter, the Late Night Council Facebook page. Peter, thank you for joining us.
Thanks again, John.